NRI Wellness. We bring you the latest in health and nutrition information, create customized nutrition programs, and walk you through the process to ensure your success.
Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to another dynamic episode of the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. I am your host, Cami Red, the owner of NRI Wellness, and we have another amazing guest on our show today, and I just have to give out an immense amount of gratitude to Robert Bell for actually joining us today, because you guys, he's joining us all the way from Kenya. So that's on the other side of the ocean. Robert is the author of Blow the Lid Off. He is a transformational speaker, an accountant, the champion of creativity, ambassador of wellness, and a pursuer of excellence. Robert, thank you again for being on the show. Please tell our listeners about yourself. Tell us your journey to wellness and how you got to this point.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to just be speaking to you guys and to share my journey and my experience around wellness with you. I am just a simple, hopeless dreamer. I'm just someone who refuses to give up on dreaming. I'm just that person who just has lots of dreams, who everyone ever since I was growing up said, you're crazy, that's just not possible. But every time I used to hear that, that just used to energize me. I have no idea why. I used to just be inspired by hearing the stories of victors, of people doing amazing things in life, people setting records and just, you know, living out their true purpose and their true destiny. So that's who I am. I'm someone who really wants to help people get back in touch with their dreams, to unlock their creativity, to bring out their uniqueness, to accept their uniqueness. My purpose and my goal is to help people think, you know, just to take a deep breath and to just start to be easy on themselves, not to be too tough on themselves, not to be too hard on themselves, because you have to be your biggest supporter. And that's just how I started. I told myself, look, I have to be my biggest supporter and I need to just believe in my dreams. I need to know that it's possible somehow. Growing up, I really failed at fitting in. In friendships, in school, I just couldn't fit in. I was just that one child who the teacher would say, does anyone have any questions? And I would have a question, not really to show off or to prove that I know anything, but because I was curious, because I wanted to learn more. Fine, this is what the textbook says, this is what, you know, the lesson says, but I want to know more. Why? I used to question a lot. Unfortunately, that was seen as very rebellious and, you know, just mere disrespectful. And of course, I was constantly punished growing up, fall back in line, you know, just imagine that whip, spanking you back in line. And I did it for a while, but somehow my toe just kept slipping out. My foot would get out of the line, my hand would get out of line, and I just was curious. I wanted to explore, I wanted to experiment, I wanted to experience life. I just tried that over and over. But you know, as you get older, you realize, all right, this seems like a losing battle. Let me just fit in. And let me motivate myself. Let me be positive that I'm going to do good. I'm going to get a good career and I'll be happy. And so I did. I got a career, did well, started rising through the ranks, but somehow the curiosity just refused to die. I got in trouble, not with teachers this time, but with my bosses, because I would get instructions. You need to do X, Y, Z. And I would sit and analyze and I'm like, all right, can you tell me why? Not doubting the instructions, but you know, when you are fresh in the corporate world, you hear, you're told, you know, you got to align your work with the vision of the company. But little did I know, in real life, a lot of companies, lots of companies, the day-to-day work that you do has no bearing with the vision of the company or the entity. And I got lost. You know, and my colleagues would just say, look, just do your work, get your paycheck and go home, man. That's just the way it is. You know, and of course, the first thing and my immediate response would be, but why? Why is it like that? So what do I have to bring? Am I just here to listen, to just follow instructions? I can't think, I can't participate. You know, it's a very top-down approach. You know, when I started corporate world, you know, my first job, I'm an accountant. I think I should have said that. I'm an accountant. And my first job as an accountant was in 2001. Just when we were turning the millennial and computers were coming in, and I questioned, why do we have to keep doing this way? And I got in a lot of trouble. So there I went throughout my life in more trouble. But of course, at some point you get tired because you find no one. You actually find no one who believes in what you say or even remotely connects with what you say. Eventually, it starts to wear down. It starts to wear you down. It weighed me down. And I was like, all right, I'm just different. I'm really crazy. Could it be that what everyone has been saying is true? That I'm really crazy? Is there something wrong with me? I think I need to get checked out. So I told the line in corporate world. I just wasn't good at it. You know, my colleague said, look, you have to just, the boss is always right. I was like, but what if one time the boss is wrong? Then we're all doomed, you know? We're all doomed. And people are like, well, that's just the way it is. Of course, couldn't accept it. Strangely enough, whenever I had a strong intuition that the boss wasn't right, somehow in the fullness of time, I was proven right. And I wasn't happy that I was proven right, because most of the times I would tell my boss, I would tell the manager that if we continue on this trajectory, we are not going to survive the next 3 years. We're not going to survive the next 5 years. And at that point, I'm not a manager. I'm not a supervisor. I'm just a plain old employee. But I care. Where is, you know, I want to work for a purpose. I don't want to just get a paycheck. You know, I want to connect what I'm doing with the purpose of the institution. That's why I chose to come and work here. You didn't choose me. I chose you because I saw something I want to align with. I want to help fulfill the vision and the mission of this company. And every time I had that gut feeling, I would tell the boss, listen, I have this gut feeling. If we don't change, if we don't innovate, if we don't make a shift, we're really going to end on a very bad path. Yeah, perhaps my powers of persuasion and my rhetoric wasn't strong then. And I lost. I may have lost, what is it? How do they say it? I've lost the battle, but I won the war. Well, we all lost because 2-3 years, just as I predicted, a number of the companies I worked for folded. A number of the companies I worked for went under, went bankrupt. And it really pained me. So when I started to see that happen, a little spark started getting inside of me. And I was like, all right, maybe not that crazy. And maybe crazy is what's needed. So of course, it was a very small voice. And I ignored it. You're going to a new environment. I ignored it. And that used to make me sick. This is the journey to my wellness, because that made me sick, because I was just pretending. I was just pretending to do what I was told to do because I'm told to do that, not because I connected with it, not because I could relate with it. I just did it just to get by. And every night, I just used to just wonder, what am I doing? What am I doing? And that made me sick. And I used to ruminate on that so much and ruminate on it. You know, I realized then, what's the point of taking care of my life? Why exercise? Why do anything anyway? Because that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. You know, this is just the way we're born. We go to school, we get a job, and we stick in it for 40 years. Who am I to move out of the mold? But somehow those inspiring stories, I remember one book that I read was Think Big by Dr. Ben Carson, you know, and I was like, all right, so where are these people? What's so different about them? Anyway, as any young child, you know, I thought I'll be a super athlete. I thought I'll be a Michael Jordan. I tried sports, failed. I tried many things, failed. I tried many, many things, failed. And I kept looking for the next thing. Somehow, I just wasn't fazed by failure. I have no idea why. I just wasn't fazed. I kept getting up, trying again, because I was convinced there has to be a crazy space for me, you know, some place. Eventually, the corporate was just too much. I had a very bad boss. I became sick, physically sick, emotionally sick. everything sick. I was doing well in my career. I was successful, but very unsatisfied. I was doing great stuff, but very dissatisfied with my life. And I just said, that's it. I said, that's it. I'm going to prioritize me. I'm going to look after me. And if it kills me, then all well be it. I have to look after me. I have to balance myself. Because for me, health and wellness, I mean, I would say health is like linking things in your life, and wellness is like syncing them together. You know, you can be connected, you can be linked to something. Many of us are linked to our careers, linked to our families, our relationships, but there's no synergy. We're not synchronized. We're not harnessing. We're not, you know, getting the power of more than one. You know, we're not, you know, just producing. We're just linking. So we go to work, we have a job, but there's no sync, you know, there's no synchronicity in our lives. And I said, I'm done with that. I want to make sure that everything in my life is balanced. So I went on a journey to find myself, take care of myself, and to start a business. And I did all of that in 1 year. I lost 50 pounds in that year when I decided to prioritize me. I started my business for the first time, and I just was at peace. I would sleep well, and I felt good about myself. I really felt good. Three things, the three-step process that I did. You know, I started to trust myself. I started to believe myself, and I started to acknowledge all the good things in my life. I put away all the negative thoughts. I accepted that label that I am crazy, and that's how I brand myself today. You know, that I'm looking for crazy people. I'm giving a shout out for every crazy person. Come here. There's a space for you to be crazy and love it and be celebrated, you know. And that's how I started my journey to wellness. That's, I just really had to find myself, you know. And that's why I champion creativity, because I say creativity is an identity extractor. I don't think there's any best way to get into wellness than connecting to your identity. Because there's also toxic wellness, toxic positivity. So many people talk about wellness, that I want to be well, but you're just doing what everyone else is doing again. You're just marching to the beat of someone else's drum when you've not taken time to listen to the beat of your own drum. And isn't that what wellness is about? You're syncing your mind, your body, and your soul. And when I got that happening, I really felt like a superhuman.
Wow. So when you say you felt sick, what were some of the symptoms that you were experiencing while you were working?
Oh, lots of stress. Lots of stress, weight gain. When I was sick, I literally just had nightmares. I would be fighting. My wife would even say, you know, you were fighting last night. You know, you were fighting last night. Because I would go to sleep really just with a lot of anger, that I could see, you know, my boss telling me to do one thing, and I can clearly see, you know, for me, I could see, no, this is just not the way to go. I need to, you know, have some input. And I was also fighting for my right to be heard. I was fighting for, you know, to have a space to bring me into the workplace, you know, and apparently I just didn't know you don't do that. You're supposed to go to work and just listen to the boss, you know. And it just annoyed me that I couldn't brain myself into it. You know, so, I mean, you fast forward. And when I saw LinkedIn release a report in 2019 that the number one in-demand soft skill of any career, any industry, was creativity. Gosh, I was just like, yeah. Then even if you went back a few years, the World Economic Forum in 2015 released a list of top skills that will be needed by 2020. And creativity was number three. You know, uniqueness, finding connections. And you can't be creative unless you are curious. And you can't be curious unless you're willing to ask questions.
And it sounds like to me, like you have a history of being inquisitive. Even from an early age, you say you didn't stand, you stood out, you didn't make friends. But I would say that's what made you unique. That's what made you successful now, is your ability to always be inquisitive and ask questions. Where you are in life now, how would you say, or what would you say some people might misunderstand about you?
I am at the point in life where I trust myself, as I said. I fully trust myself and I trust the process, which means I am able to rest. I am able to take a break. As I say a lot to my coaching clients and to whenever I go to speak in engagements, is you cannot truly rest until you can truly trust. I mean, how do you sleep good at night? You sleep good at night because your doors are locked, right? You have that sort of security that you're being protected. Now, would you go to sleep if the doors and your locks were broken? You'd be very unsettled. You know, you'd be quite anxious. You'll actually be lying in bed waiting for daybreak just to wake up to see, has anyone come in? Is everything still here? And isn't that how we live a lot of our lives? You know, we go to the bed, but we're not really sleeping because we're worried about tomorrow or we're worried about what happened yesterday. We're not able to stay here. So I'm at the place where I can take a rest, where I can trust myself. And even if I am working on something, I need to put out some material, some content, I'll take a break. I'll take a break and say, you know what? Let me take a deep breath and then you come back to it. Because even scientifically and neurologically, you don't come up with ideas by just sitting looking at the screen. You have to take a break. You got to do an activity that's less taxing. I mean, just getting into a bit of heavy science here. We have three major networks in our brains, right? One is called the default mode network. The second one is called the executive network. I'm just going to focus on those two. And the executive network is just that. You're in executive mode. You're doing. I have this task. You know, you're in the doing phase. The default mode network is when you're resting, and that's when the ideas come. That's when your brain is able to now make connections, not just between the obvious, but the non-obvious things. And one of the best ways that happens is at sleep. It's at sleep. The fourth stage of sleep, the sleep cycle, is called the REM stage, the rapid eye movement stage. And neuroimaging shows us that that's when the brain filters through every input, sensory input, you know, audible input, everything that you've gone through throughout the day, and starts to make connections. So you have to be able to trust your process. You have to be able to trust yourself. You have to be able to trust your brain and your mind when you're at rest to make the connection. And that's why when you wake up at times, that's where I am right now, my wellness. You wake up at times, I got an idea. You wake up fresh. You wake up, you know, refreshed, because you've given your body and you're giving your whole being time to sink. Your brain, right? Your mind, your head, your heart, and your hand. You know, body, mind, and spirit has just synced. You're giving them that chance. So that's where I am with my wellness right now. And I would just say one of the things that I did, because, you know, wellness is active. You have to be active with wellness. So one thing that I did recently that was a big, you know, was a big trust. It was, you know, like getting into that, you know, that relationship. You know, it was a big trust. Is I went on a 7-day digital detox. And that was, you know, going into it, I had no idea if I could last 7 days. And you know what? I didn't care. I just wanted to start the journey. But I did it. 7 days, no screen, no technology, nothing whatsoever. And I just want to go back. So that's where I am with my wellness, and I'm willing to trust myself.
Listen, I love that. I did that too for my 40th birthday back in June. I went on a 7-day digital detox. I actually went to a wilderness retreat up in Ohio. So I was out in the woods, same way, for 7 days, no screens, no social media, no nothing, just me reconnecting with self and nature. So I'm there. I love that idea. I love it. So, Robert, let's talk about your book, Blow the Lid Off. Tell us what that is about. What inspired you to write it? And what problems does your book solve?
All right. So my book is titled Blow the Lid Off, Reclaim Your Stolen Creativity, Increase Your Income, and Let Your Light. My book, I've chosen that title for three reasons. Not that I had all three reasons when I started, but before I tell you all reasons, is the book is in essence, just helping us to, as it says, reclaim our stolen creativity. And I say that our creativity has been stolen, because when something has been stolen, it's been taken without your permission. That means, and I start the book off with a very firm position, that we are all creative. There's nothing like the creative type or non-creative type, left brain or right brain. That's actually a myth. So my book is just debunking that myth that some are creative and some aren't. We are all born creative. Now, obviously, some person listening might say, no, absolutely not. I'm not good at painting. I'm not a musician. And that's one of the challenges that the book is addressing, that creativity is not just artistic. It's not limited to artistic expression. Right? Creativity is even intellectual. I mean, when I used to go to school, people who were deemed creative were just looked at as a bit of, all right, they really can't add too well, you know, they're not so good in science or English, you know, so let them do something that's not so, you know, taxing on the brain. Because we've had this misconception that creativity has, you know, it can't really be assessed, you know, that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So every painting is beautiful. And we got these myths growing up that creativity is just, you know, sort of like a waste of time, right? But that's what the book is addressing. So why blow the lid off? Blow the lid off because, one, we have suppressed our innate ability to be unique. We have suppressed it, and I am giving a rallying call for us to just blow the lid off your limitations, to blow the lid off things that are holding you down. You know, I think about my experience when I was in school or going in my corporate career. You're just suppressed. You're suppressed. Your ideas are suppressed. You can't speak up. I mean, how many of us can go to a boss and say, look, I have this idea? I mean, maybe now, you know, post-COVID, you know, this pandemic, you know, bosses are a bit more open to, you know, hearing ideas. But back then, absolutely not. And so that's number one reason why you blow the lid off. Number two, blow the lid off. I mean, we know that expression. You know, it's, you know, journalists usually use it when they're about to reveal a big scandal, you know, this big conspiracy. We're going to blow the lid off this conspiracy of who's, you know, stealing money somewhere, right? And that is the whole point of the book, that I'm blowing the lid off this conspiracy that some people are creative, some people aren't creative. It's been a conspiracy all your life that you are either creative or not based on your artistic expression. You're creative or not based on this. But little do you know, if you reflect on your life, at one point in your life, you are open, you're curious, you are a dreamer. But just like me, when I started to go through life, it became suppressed. You're told this is just the way it is. You fit into the norm. And I tell people, listen, creativity is actually for failures, right? You can't be creative unless you're a failure. It's for people who fail to fit in. It's for people who fail to just follow the mold blindly. That's what creativity is about. Number three, blow the lid off, because I want us as a society, I need us as humanity to really reposition our uniquely human creativity. We need to start dreaming more, because that's how we're going to solve the world's problems. If you look at our entire human existence from, you know, as far back as records or documentation can show us, is that any major, you know, evolution or every major change in humanity has come about because of creative insights. What I say is that we're living in the reality of yesterday's dreamers. That's the only how we exist. So what we're experiencing now with technology or any part of life is because someone dared to dream yesterday and someone dared to follow their dream. So what are we dreaming today? We are in charge of creating our own future. You know, that's why I wrote the book. And as I go around, you know, doing a lot of media interviews on podcasts or wherever, you know, some myths that I find people have is, all right, okay, so you basically want me to start, you know, just drawing or anything. But I've never done an assessment to be creative. And that's one of the myths. People ask, all right, so when will I become creative? I said, when you start trusting yourself. When you say you're not creative, what you're basically saying is that you don't trust yourself. You don't trust that the ideas that are coming into your head mean something. And you know why you don't trust yourself? You know why we don't trust ourselves? It's because we tend to see value from the outside in. And it never works that way with creativity. If you're always going to judge and assess your ideas and dreams based on what you currently see around you, then you're going to end up in trouble. Because creativity is about imagining something novel and useful. At times, it's going to be something different that no one else has seen. And that's why IBM, when they conducted a survey of over 5,000 CEOs, they said the number one skill for any leader, for effective leaders, for effective CEOs, is being creative. Because if you're going to lead, you have to catch a vision early. You have to have that vision. You have to be a visionary. You know, we've described these things in so many different words, but it all comes back down to creativity. It all comes back down to creativity. If you're a leader or you're an aspiring leader, you have to be a visionary. And in order for you to be a visionary, you got to be able to trust yourself. Which CEO have you ever seen of any global company that doesn't trust themselves? They stand up in front of thousands, some of them hundreds of thousands of employees, and say, this is the way we're going. Pitch it to the leadership team and they catch the vision and they push it. You have to be able to believe in your uniqueness. The challenge, or you don't believe in our uniqueness, is because we have surrendered our creativity in order to be compliant. As an accountant, I know very much about compliance, and we want to be compliant with quote unquote the rules of life, to go to school, to get a good job, to be a good employee. We have conformed and conformed. But the more we conform is the less we'll be able to reform. 90% of my corporate career, I've had roles that were created specific, you know, just new roles. They didn't exist in the organizational chart. And every time I interviewed, I was given the job because they were like, look, we're looking for someone. We don't know who we're really looking for, but when we interviewed you, we found that person, you know, and I refused to be anyone else. But I have to be very, very honest with you. I applied for lots of jobs, as do most people. And I kept getting rejection letter after rejection letter. You know, I even worked with an HR coach, an HR consultant. We would identify vacancies. She would even help me write the letter, the application letter, get my resume ready. And I still wouldn't even be called. And she was like, okay, I just don't get it right now. I really don't get it. But later on is when we discovered, no, I don't fit into molds. I can't be applying for a job. If a job is already created, then I'm too late. I need to be the one to define the job. So at times I've gone in for an interview for one job and they're like, okay, no, you're not a good fit for that. We're going to create a new job just for you. And that's what the book is about. It's about helping us increase our income. You know, the second part of the subtitle. And, you know, it's about just letting our light shine. Imagine you trusting yourself, trusting your ideas, trusting your uniqueness, going for it. You're going to let your light shine. You're going to shine. And you're not doing it for stardom or for celebrity status. You're doing it because you're letting your light shine to help others, to help your company, to help your family, to help society, but most importantly, to help yourself. I think too often we're too hard on ourselves. We're too hard on ourselves that we have to serve everyone else, but we don't take time to serve ourselves. And isn't that what wellness is about? It's about serving you. It's about being of service to yourself. It's about taking care of yourself. It's about prioritizing yourself. It's about giving yourself the best chance to win. When you don't have a strong wellness practice, you're not giving yourself a good chance to win. And that's why even in the book, I talk about wellness. I talk about emotional intelligence, right? And you should definitely grab a copy of the book. And it's not a long book. It's a book meant to be read very slowly and meditatively.
Oh, don't worry. I'm actually going to grab a copy. I'm going to order a copy. But I'm also going to post the link because just listening to you, I've taken a great deal of notes. So in our group, I'm probably going to end up hosting a book review or a book meeting just about the book and inviting other people to get this book, because it sounds like there is some really valuable information in this book for others.
Absolutely. That would be fantastic. Absolutely. It's a book just meant for us to really go back inside, not stop looking outside, right? We got to get our value from inside out, right? That's the only how we're going to appreciate ourselves. So this is the problem that I saw. I'm an accountant, and I would never drop that title of accountant. And the reason why I'll never drop it is because I want to show people, I want to lead by example. And I want to show people that, listen, your profession is not the source of your identity. Your profession is just an expression of your identity. It's not your entire being. So when I'm an accountant, stereotypically, you know, you have an accountant, you have a CPA, just about the numbers. I don't want to use the word boring, but yeah. You know, we think that, you know, just a little bit boring. And I got a lot of, I don't want to call it negative feedback, but whenever I would be out with people, they're like, oh, you're so well-spoken for an accountant. I was like, okay. Oh, you're not as boring as I thought you would be. I was like, all right, so how did you think I was when you never met me? You know, and that's why I decided, you know what, I'm never going to drop this title of accountant, because I want to introduce myself and say I'm an accountant. And I just want to see people's reaction. And from that, I'm just going to wheel them in a bit. I was like, all right, so because I'm an accountant, you then think you know me? You then think you can define me? No, absolutely not. And that's what I tell people, that your profession should never define you. It should just describe you. That's it. So I'm an accountant, and that describes a part of me, that I'm analytical, I'm detail-oriented, I believe I'm trustworthy. That's why people give me their money to manage, right? So that describes a few attributes about me, but it doesn't define me, because if it defines me, it captures me in a box, And just like when you introduced me, that's why I identify myself as a champion of creativity, an ambassador of wellness, and a pursuer of excellence. So whether I'm an accountant, whether I'm a busboy, whether I'm a truck driver, I am still going to champion creativity. I'm still going to be an ambassador of wellness, and I'm still going to be a pursuer of excellence. Look, I'm going to grab all the truck drivers and say, look, let's find a creative way to save the company money to deliver these goods on time. Look, we got to take care of ourselves. You know, we need to push the company to give us ergonomic seats in our trucks, you know, and I'm still going to pursue excellence. I said, guys, we have to be the most fuel efficient fleet on this Eastern Seaboard. You know, I'm still going to do that. Right. So not just because I'm a truck driver, and shout out to any truck drivers, no offense to anyone. It doesn't just mean that I sit, drive, you know, eat fast food and that's it. No, that doesn't define who you are. That's just, so don't get wrapped up into that box, you know, of your profession. Your identity doesn't come from there. And you can only reverse that when you take back your creativity, because you had a uniqueness. You had something very special about you. And those are the problems that I'm out to tackle with this book. This book is just a start to get people into this cocoon so that we can heal. We can heal from the traumatic experience of our creativity being stolen from us. Look, when something gets stolen from you, it is traumatizing. And something as personal, do you know there's nothing more personal in life than your creativity? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not even love. Not even love. Right? Love may vary from person to person, but it's not as uniquely personal as your creativity, because this is your mind. I know people say that the heart is more powerful than the mind, but guess what? When you have a heart full of love, but no creativity, no uniqueness, then you're out of balance. Your wellness is not effective, because your wellness must sync your mind, your body, and your soul. I'll tell you something, even scientifically, the biggest part of our brains, the neurocortex part of our brains, what we use it to do is higher level activities, language, creativity, expression, communication. So I could love you, but if I can't find a way to bring out my uniqueness of how I love you, it's going to be a bit of a challenge there. It's really going to be a bit of a challenge here. That's what I am out to address. It's not just about painting. It's not just about singing. It's about bringing out our uniqueness, about solving problems, and about just making this world a better place. As I said, I'm a hopeless dreamer that I could change the world. And all I have to do is change the world for one person and another person. And I've changed the world.
Wow, that is very true. So I've gotten a lot of little, you know, quotes and tidbits from you while you were speaking, especially in regards to your book. But what's some of the common myths that you hear often that you find yourself dispelling a lot around creativity? I know you touched on a few, but when you go into your one-on-ones with your clients, what are some things that you hear then?
All right. So some of the other myths that I hear, especially when I get into one-on-one coaching, is I want to say a barrier. I want to say a blockage. And it relates to what I said earlier. It's about the trauma, right? It's about the not admitting that there was a traumatic experience that took away our creativity. That's one of the myths, that it just disappeared somehow, you know, like I just lost it. And I love, you know, Dr. Brené Brown, you know, vulnerability researcher. And she says, look, out of 85% of the people she interviewed, right, just about 85% of the people she interviewed can identify that they had some kind of traumatic experience when they are younger that affected their vulnerability, that made them, you know, cocoon. And out of those 85% of the people she interviewed, half of them said it was around a creative expression. Maybe they had a painting, or maybe they had something, and their friends laughed at, their classmates laughed at them. You know, 4 or 5 years old, you know, the teacher said, oh, that's so cute, but it's not, you know, valuable or anything. And that trauma was carried throughout their life. So that's one of the myths, that it's just something that just got lost. One of the myths is that I'm going to sit you down, we're going to go through this one-on-one coaching, and I'm going to give you technical skills of how to get your creativity back. Do 1, 2, 3, 4, get it back. No. The biggest myth is that it's very personal. It's highly personal. And that's why I tell people that if you want to tap into that deeper dimension, you got to work. It's got to be personalized. It's got to be one-on-one. Yes, you can sign up for my group coaching. Yes, you can read my book, ETC. But you need to be guided back to where that trauma happened. And then we come and build it out. I would say those two are the biggest, you know, myths I have to deal with, because people are unwilling to go back to, you know, really deal with that trauma and to heal with that trauma. And, you know, trauma that's not transformed is transferred.
This is a 2-second nutrition tip. Today's tip is become a savvy food label reader. Understand exactly what's going into your food. Let me know how that goes. This has been a 2-second nutrition tip.
So, Robert, walk us through what it would be like going through your coaching program. We are looking for trying to enhance our creative wellness. Describe the process behind that, all the way from your breakthrough session to the end of the complete program. Tell us what that looks like.
All right. So I'm taking someone who's listening to this and first, you know, probably purchased my book and, you know, now is more curious, wants to really unlock the creativity and get it done. One avenue or one channel is starting with a breakthrough call. Some people call it a discovery call. I call it a breakthrough call because it's about adding value. You know, just a session to find out where are you on your creative journey, what are your blocks, what are your challenges, give you a little guidance, just like what I'm doing on this podcast, but, you know, more personal for you to understand, you know, where you are, understand the environment in which you're operating in, and just to create a safe space. And when that happens, if there's linkage, if we're linking, if we're syncing, and we realize, great, we definitely can take this further, then, you know, agreements are made and we sign up to do one-on-one coaching. And in this one-on-one coaching, just like what I tell people, is that we first, as we go through the program, the first thing we got to start dealing is our wellness. We don't start directly with creativity because we have to prepare the soil. So I take time with my coaches to prepare the soil, to work on our wellness. because just as I said, creativity is about trusting yourself. So we have to start preparing the ground for us to trust ourselves. We work through our wellness, we get ourselves prepared, we start working on our routines. Where are your routines? What do you need to do? We build up that wellness. We start doing a few small activities because, you know, being creative, we also have, it's active, it's hands-on. We have to start doing a few things. And it's a very unorthodox approach, I totally agree. But we have to get our mind and our brain ready to start making new connections. We can't just sit. As I said, you know, being creative is not just sitting down and say, all right, I'm ready to be creative, let's go. It doesn't work that way. So during my programs, we start to identify what's the best environment for you. Where are you? Where do you live? How's your household? Do you have access? Particularly during this time of COVID pandemic, where some places, you know, restrictions are limited, you can't do ETC. We start to work out where can you go to start getting more in tune with yourself, ETC. Then we crunch it up. We really crunch it up and we take it now to getting into the heart of creativity, really starting to redefine what creativity is in your life, in your particular profession. So we go into detail into how can you start using one of my signature moves, which is called MAMI, M-A-M-I, which means making minor adjustments that give you major improvements, right? Minor adjustments that give you major improvements, but not just any small changes, not the major improvements. Why it's major improvement? Because it's linked and tied to a priority. So we kick up the notch in the second stage and we start to prioritize creativity and you start to make minor adjustments into it. You start making minor adjustments. And one of the minor adjustments is getting more sleep, more rest. You know, that's, we get into details as to why that's beneficial, etc. And then at the third level of the coaching program, now this is when we need to move from the trusting stage. We move from the trusting stage to the belief stage. We have to realize that before you can believe something, you must have first trusted, right? I want to use even a romantic relationship. Before you can start believing in your partner or believing in your relationship, there must have been some sort of evidence, right? You must have evidence. So the third stage we move, you have to fully trust. And even if you're not ready to trust, I thrust you out of that comfort zone for you to believe yourself. And believing in yourself means learning to embrace and engage failure and pain. And that's what we do at that stage. I teach you how to start engaging and embracing with failure so that you can believe in yourself. Because even in failure, you can believe yourself. And that's why my MAMI principle is so key. Because imagine you fail at something, but from that, you can believe in yourself. Because you see, failure is not personal. It's just an event. Right? So I teach you how to start disassociating failure with identifying yourself, just like I do with starting to help disassociate your profession with your identity. It's just an expression. It's not the source of your identity. And at that level is when, I mean, at every level there's a breakthrough, but at that level is when that's my sound effect for blow the lid off. That's when, you know, lid is just blown off. And I just love that level. When I get there with people, they're just like, wow, you know, but it takes time. And that's why we can't start there. We can't start there. We have to build up the process because, you know, your creativity has been suppressed. And that's how the coaching program works. That's one-on-one specifically. A lot more that goes into that, but that's what I can say for now. And then in teams now, because there are teams that really want to enhance their creativity. And because I work with professionals a lot, some are business owners, and I really have a bias for small business owners. That entrepreneur who had an idea, he started his business and he gets a team around him. But guess what? Oftentimes when you're an entrepreneur, you have a small business, your team members may not necessarily be at that point where they can catch the vision and really implement it. Particularly if we've gone through our traditional education systems, right? That focuses more on memorization, you know, on standardized tests. That doesn't give room for questioning and curiosity. It's going to be a bit of a shift for such a team member to start, you know, having input, because entrepreneurs don't want robots. They want, if I can call it, mini entrepreneurs. They want people who can take ownership of things. You know, when you work in a small business, you do everything. You can't come in and say, I'm a marketing specialist, and you bury your head and you're like, all right, I'm doing marketing. You know, you have to chip in here and there. You're integrated. So that's another aspect of how I work with, you know, small businesses, doing workshops, just working with teams, you know, even like on Zoom. How do we create that team synergy? And the number one thing that I would say is the number one output of the workshops is being able to create an environment of psychological safety, right? So it's just like what I do with the one-on-one coaching. You know, if you're a small business owner or any kind of business owner, you're a leader, you know, you have to be able to create an environment of psychological safety. But even if you do that at times, people still, if they don't trust themselves, they're just not going to participate. So sometimes it goes beyond you. So even in the workshops, we have to have some small breakouts where people can learn to trust not just themselves, but their teammates. Trust, I say teammates because we're a team, you know, I don't say coworkers. I mean, I just try to, you know, very particular with my language in, because words have meaning. Words carry heavy meaning, and we need to be very intentional, you know, with the languaging that we say. And I do that across all my programs where we create a new vocabulary, right? We create a new vocabulary so we can understand and communicate more effectively our visions and our feelings and our ideas, right? We have to be able to kick up our skills of rhetoric. If you don't have that, you can have the best ideas, but if you can't sell, in quotation mark, your ideas, then you're in trouble. And that's another myth. A lot of people think that selling is just for salespeople. Absolutely not. And I'm really just grateful for the experience I've had. I've actually worked in sales. I've worked in marketing. I've worked in IT. I've worked in procurement. I've worked in so many different careers, if you want to call it that. And that's why I tell people that, look, your profession should not define you. And I'm still an accountant. In all that, I used, you know, it's called interdisciplinary skills, right? Transferable skills. That goes across anywhere. Collaboration. These are skills that, you know, through workshop that we have to end up building, you know, robust. And I'm just happy that all the experts are agreeing with that. You know, as I made reference to the LinkedIn report and the World Economic Forum, you know, complex problem solving, collaboration, those are the skills and the things we need to work on. And it's amazing, you know, how creativity works is once you create an environment and you plant the seed, all you have to do is nurture it. You just have to learn to nurture it. So in the workshops, that's what we do. How do we learn to prepare the soil, just like at an individual level? As a team, how do we plant the seed? Because, you know, we get thoughts. Creativity is based on thoughts, right? And you have to be able to distinguish when thoughts are seeds or when they're weeds. And that's the challenge that a lot of people have in the creative journey, because you don't know. It goes back to the whole concept of trusting yourself, right? Because you get thoughts. And many people don't, and that's why we get stuck in inaction, because we just don't know. How do we filter out if this thought is a seed that I need to nurture, that I need to grow, or if it's a weed that I need to rot out? Of course, at a high level, it's easy. You know, positive thoughts are seeds, negative thoughts are weeds, but it's much more complex than that. So we do that in the workshops, learning how to also identify others' thoughts. And as a leader, that's another program that I work with now, with specifically for leaders, because you need to be able to identify the seeds, the thoughts that are seeds in your team. You not only need to be able to identify it, you need to be able to bring it out. You need to be able to bring out those thoughts that are in your team that are seeds to pursue it. And of course, some seeds may grow, some seeds may not grow. It's about identifying the right type of soil, right? Some trees grow in particular good environments, some plants grow, you know, just using that analogy. And that's what we do when I get into the coaching sessions, into the workshops, and yeah, tailor-made programs, should anyone have a need around that area. And that's where I come alive. That's why I love it. That's why I love working with people in all aspects. And then, yes, of course, speaking engagements, giving keynote addresses, addressing corporates or organizations. And as I said, particularly small businesses, just helping them to overcome that. Because, you know, global statistics show us that 80% of small businesses fail within the first year. 80%. Can you imagine? That's someone who had an idea, who really saw value, but just failed for some reason or the other. You know, maybe a difficult environment, competitive environment, or just not, as I identify it, not understanding your numbers, because I'm an accountant. Because as Warren Buffett says that, you know, accounting is the language of business. And many people fear accounting. So can you imagine, I'm tackling two of the most difficult problems in life, right? Helping people to become creative and helping people to become intimate and knowledgeable about finances, about the accounting. And it doesn't mean you have to be an accountant as a business owner or even as a leader, right? It's just understanding the impact and the insight that accounting gives you. The impact and insight, or also the impact that of not understanding accounting. Because if you don't understand accounting and you just leave it to the CPA and you make decisions and they're not correlating, then you're going to end up in trouble. So those are two very difficult things, but I love difficulty, I love challenges, and it helps me to become very creative in my approaching and helping people.
So let me ask you this. What is a time, tell me about a time that a client or a patient actually touched your heart in a way that it actually made you change the way you practice?
Think of one example. Everyone has, you know, made me adjust. I would say adjust slightly. I'm thinking of one major example would be, there's one client who, and I'm trying to find one that's not traditionally creative, but the one that I'm thinking about is in the creative, if you want to call it that, industry. She's a singer. And what touched my heart with how I changed my approach is I became very binary. And at one point I did sort of not talk about the accounting side of it. And I really started pushing the creative side, setting up the business structure. I mean, you know, developing the creative skills. But she touched me so much because she kept pushing me that don't let go of your accounting knowledge, because even the way you teach accounting, even the way you explain the numbers is just magical. And I was like, all right, that's interesting. So that really made me change my approach. And that's why I incorporate, you know, financial wellness now, if you want to call it that, talking about our money mindset, our money traps, our idea of value, because I realized this issue of the starving artist is very real. So I
was actually surprised when I saw your background that even when you filled out the questionnaire for my show, you picked creative wellness. And I was like, wow, you have no idea how many people in the creative field would actually die for you to teach them financial wellness as well.
Yes, that was the big breakthrough. You know, that was the big breakthrough with that particular client. And I started then teaching now people in the creative sector, if you want to call it that, how to manage their finances, how to understand, because creativity pays. You know, one of my keynote addresses to topic is that creativity pays. It doesn't just pay monetarily, it pays emotionally, it pays in all aspects of life, but particularly, you know, in a monetary, in a financial means. But you have to be able to identify value. And as I was saying that, I have a cross-section of clients from, you know, very artistic, creative people who say, look, I'm just doing it for love. It comes easy to me. I don't need money. You know, but what they're really saying is that I don't understand the value and impact money has. Because look, in this world that we live in, money is what you use to get things done. Right? So even if you want to get your word out there, you do need money to market it. You need money to get a bigger platform. So you could be the most technically skilled, you know, artistic, creative person, right? And just doing it for the love because you have fan base and everything. But you need money to be able to connect with them. You need, and you deserve, you know, money. Not because it's the object, not because it's the subject of your work, but it's the object. It's the return of value that you're creating in society. And the starving artist syndrome is because there's been some trauma when it comes to money. If you dig deep, and when I dig deep in one-on-one, you clients, you realize there was some trauma around money. You know, it's just like what Robert Kiyosaki goes into, you know, rich dad, poor dad. You know, one dad's like, oh, you don't need money. This is, we're doing it for the love of it, etc. But no, there's usually some sort of money block. So that was one experience that made me totally change and just own my, you know, accounting, my accounting status. And that's why, like, when I fill out the questionnaire, if you see my profile, is that, look, I want to dismantle the line between professionals and the creative world. I want to bring them together and use that line and reconstruct it into a circle. So I take everyone around it. So if you're creative on the creative side of the line, you got to learn to come to the professional side in terms of setting up structure around your artistic abilities or your ideas, monetizing it. And that's how I've structured the book. Part A of the book looks at, you know, really digging deep into the creative side. Part B goes into some technical heavy, you know, how to identify your niche market, you know, just understanding those hard business skills. Because look, at the end of it all, it's not just about creating an idea. You also can be paid from it.
So, Robert, again, thank you for being on the show. Why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, your website, how they can find you, where they can buy your book, if you have an email address, your number, if that's a public information, as well as where you are on social media.
Fantastic. Yes, this is time to connect. All right, so you can get in contact with me, through my website, www.robertabelle, and Bell is BELLE.com. Definitely on socials, Facebook, Robert Agufana Bell, and Agufana is AGUFANA Bell. Same thing on LinkedIn. On Instagram and Twitter, it's Robert_A_Bell. So basically across platforms, if you just type Robert A. Bell, you should definitely be able to find me. And also one new social platform that I've just launched recently is my YouTube channel. Yeah, that's been one of my things to trust myself. So you can find me on YouTube, Robert A. Bell. We definitely have the links, I'm sure, that you can follow. Please check out my channel, check out the videos. Subscribe, like videos, comment, let me know, because that's part of the creative process, feedback. I work on three major themes on the YouTube channel. It's Creative Mondays, Wellness Wednesdays, and Friday Excellence. So I shoot content around those three major themes, which are my identity pillars, you know, champion of creativity, ambassador of wellness, and pursuer of excellence. So I want to just keep curating content around those three main pillars. And that's the best way you can get in contact with me.
Awesome. Now, you guys, don't forget, you will also be able to find Robert's contact information on our website, nriwellness.com, where we always write an article about all of our guests and post their information there as well. Then don't forget to join our Facebook page, 10 Dimensions of Wellness, where we have all of our guests there as well. Some of them have signed up for mentorship programs. Others have posted live videos, done classes. You can link up with all of our guests there, listen to past shows, listen and find the article that we repost as well. So let's get into wrapping up the show a little bit. And Robert, we're going to ask you the four questions that we ask all of our guests. The first question is, what's been the biggest surprise you had in the last few months?
Ooh, that's such a difficult question. It's difficult because I really want to say this, you know, with lots of, how can I say it? There have been a lot of surprises, very good ones also, despite the pandemic and, you know, the bad things that come with it. There's just been a lot of surprises, more particularly because I what I think what catalyzed or was a catalyst for a lot of the surprises in the last few months was the release of my book. It's my first book, and that just seems to have just blown up a lot of things and amplified a lot of things in my life. So if I was to choose one, I would say is my book, which was just released, first-time author. And for someone who is dyslexic, who struggled in school with writing, you know, just for me, releasing the book was a big, was good that I got there. But the biggest surprise is that I was, my book has been nominated for 2020 Reader's Choice Award by TCK Publishing in the self-help category. I think that was just the biggest surprise. You know, that
congratulations for that. That's awesome. Yes.
Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much. Yeah, this is a big surprise, and I'm asking people to vote for me. I don't know when this podcast will be released. I know voting closes in October.
Oh yeah, well, it'll be released before then. So what we'll do is we'll actually post it in the group, the After the Podcast 10 Dimensions of Wellness group. So if you're, I'll send you a link to the group. You join the group and just post the link asking people to vote for you and your book. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I would really appreciate that. Not just because I want to win the award, but I want to, as I said, amplify that it's time to take back our creativity. I want to, you know, I want to show the world. I want to, I want us to say that we're not going to have it anymore. The computers are not going to take our places. You know, we're not going to be made redundant. We are going to take our place, you know, as unique humans. So that's been my biggest surprise. I am just, yeah, really, really excited about that.
Awesome. Now, what do you wish you had known 10 years ago that you know now?
Mm-hmm. 10 years ago. Well, actually, the last 10 years, particularly of my life, has been the most wonderful years of my life. Started off because I went through what I would say was my first depression episode, you know, like real depression. I was just hopeless. I just didn't feel like there was anything left. So what I wish I knew then is that I am crazy. I really wish that I knew for sure that I am crazy. I'm crazy to write a book despite suffering dyslexia. I'm crazy to be a public speaker despite literally shaking growing up public speaking. As a matter of fact, I only got over my fear of speaking just a few years ago. Just a few years ago, and people just don't believe that. I would literally shake. If you would ask me to speak or interview me on a podcast, I'd be like I would shake, my palms would sweat. I would just be a nervous wreck. So, I mean, just 10 years ago, I wish that I knew, and not knew just by information, but by experience. I just wish that I was crazy. I knew that I was crazy and accept that I am crazy. And crazy doesn't mean that I'm loco, psycho. It just means that I will go and find my own path.
You will take the risk that it takes to be successful. That's what crazy
is. I will take the risk. I will take the risk and I will just trust myself. I wish I knew that 10 years ago, but still no regrets. But if I had known it, that would have helped. But somehow I just wouldn't change it. I just wouldn't change it because it's really just prepared me for where I am now. The growth has happened below the surface. So that's what I wish I knew 10 years ago.
Awesome. So what inspires you or it makes you feel like your best self?
What inspires me is my writing. My writing inspires me because my writing is a direct translation of my thinking. It's a direct translation of my thinking. And my thinking is a direct translation of my beliefs. I often, when I go into my meditation, like every Wednesday, I just spend time. I don't take meetings. I don't have clients, nothing. I just sit and think or write or read. And the thoughts that come to my mind are just so amazing. I end up writing a lot. I'm just writing. And half of the times, I have no idea what they mean. I just write. And the download comes so juicy, so, you know, so refreshing that it, you know, a few weeks down the line or a few months down the line, it just, just just makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to share one with you guys. I'm going to share one with you guys to tell you and to show you, you know, what that looks like. And so when I was writing my book and just pursuing this whole creativity agenda, something came to my mind when I was writing. So I said, okay. So I asked myself, because I put myself in the position of the reader. So I asked myself, what would being creative get me? Fine. You know, I don't like to be very theoretical. I like to be very practical. So I asked myself, when someone reads my book, what are three things they were going to get from my book? And I said, I speak to myself a lot. I role play. You know, so I said, Robert, tell me, what am I going to get when I read your book? And I said, okay, listen, Robert, this is what you're going to get. Creativity gives you knowledge of your purpose, clarity of your vision, and revelation of your value. And during meditation, that just came to me in that exact order and with those exact words. And I was like, I didn't think about it. And you know, in the creative journey, when I do, especially my one-on-one, I just say, just write, just journal, especially when it's first thing in the morning. And I wrote it down. I didn't go back and question it. Don't question yourself. Trust yourself. And I let it go. I let it go. And I started saying that when I go for interviews. I even put it in my speeches. I have no idea what it meant. I still didn't think about it. I didn't evaluate it. I was like, does it even make sense? But I'm willing to take that risk that if it doesn't make sense, all well and good. I still trusted myself that it was good. I didn't doubt myself. Now, a few weeks ago, I like reading latest research on neuroscience and, you know, just what's happening. And in the Journal of Psychology, so one thing I said after all of that is that creativity is an identity extractor. It extracts your identity. So I wrote that down also. I have no idea. I even shot a whole YouTube video about it, posted it. I had no idea what that meant. I just wrote it down because I trust my process. I was reading in the Journal of Psychology and they were talking about identity. And let me even just get it here for you so that I can read it. I had it written down here in my notes. Journal of Psychology, and it talked about identity. And they said there are three things that identity, that the process of identity deals with, right? And it talks about finding one's purpose. Two, developing your purpose. And three, finding a place where you're able to fulfill that purpose, where you're able to live it out, where you're able to, you know, harness it. And then I just read that and I was just reading for general knowledge. I wasn't reading for, you know, any sort of, you know, content, you know. So I just like reading for general knowledge. So let me repeat that. So the Journal of Psychology said that identity formation involves three key tasks: discovering and developing one's potential, choosing one's purpose in life, and finding opportunities to exercise that potential and purpose. When I read that, I was like, wait, that sounds very familiar. Where have I read that before? And I just couldn't remember. I was like, wait. As I looked back at what I said creativity does, it gives you one, knowledge of your purpose, two, clarity of your vision, and three, revelation of your value. So I looked at it, knowledge of your purpose. And the Journal of Psychology says that when you're forming your identity, it involves one, choosing one's purpose in life. Then two, discovering and developing one's potential. That sounds very familiar with clarity of vision. And then three, they said, finding opportunities to exercise that potential and purpose. And I said, that sounds like revelation of value. And I was like, holy moly. That is what inspires me. That is because now I just exactly what I do with my clients. I moved from the trust stage to the belief. So now I believe my process. And that's what inspires me.
Awesome. So if you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Wow. It's So am I on the billboard, or I can design the billboard?
You design the billboard. If you want to put your picture on it, you can. But what would that billboard say, and why would it say that?
On the billboard, I would say, you are crazy, but not as crazy as you need to be, because you have lost connection with your true identity. I don't even know what that means. I just said it off the cuff.
That was good, though. Like, you had me with that one. Like, I was like, wow, I like that one.
Okay, if it catches you, great. I'm going to write it down.
Don't worry, I wrote it down, too. I was like, okay, yes, thank you for that insight.
Great.
So, Robert, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast today. It has been such a pleasure speaking with you. You have no idea how much information I've actually learned just from hearing you speak. I took about 8 pages worth of notes listening to you. And I'm just grateful that you decided to grace us with your presence from all the way over in our motherland. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. You're very welcome. I've really enjoyed being on the show. I just can't wait to, you know, connect with those who are listening and help you reclaim your stolen creativity. This is my mission in life, and we're going to change the world. We are going to change the world.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to working with you more as well. So you guys, you can listen to our podcast, download it, share it with others. Make sure you are leaving comments on our podcast page as well. We are on Spotify. We are on iHeartRadio. We are on Anchor FM. We are on Google. We are on Apple Music and a plethora of other, Pandora as well, and a plethora of other audio platforms. Don't forget to check us out on our YouTube channel, NRI Wellness, where you can also catch all of our podcasts, listen to them as well, our past and future podcasts. Now, as always, we're going to direct you guys to join our Facebook group, The 10 Dimensions of Wellness, for after the podcast. A lot of our guests are in that group. Don't forget, our guests teach classes there. They mentor there. They do one-on-ones there as well. So join us, meet our guests, get any information that you got on the show. Thank you for another dynamic episode of The 10 Dimensions of Wellness, you guys. Have a great night.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.